I know you're an MSP, but what am I? Find out if you're a boomer, a zoomer, or a crowd striker. Don't forget to rate your hacker 5 stars. These stories and much more on today's episode of MSP Dispatch.
This episode is presented by the Salty Soul Foundation. Since 2017, Salty Soul has removed over 20,000 pounds of trash in Florida and California. Visit saltysoulfoundation.org to support this organization via direct donation or purchase of their merchandise.
Good morning and welcome to the September 20th, 2022 episode of MSP Dispatch, your source for news, community events, and commentary in the MSP channel. I'm Ray Rossini, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Tony Francisco. How you doing, Tony?
Excellent. Here to facilitate specifically the commentary portion of this amazing show. How are you doing, Ray?
I'm good. Did you know this is our anniversary?
Get out of here.
This is the 50th episode of MSP Dispatch.
Oh, this is better than hate sex. Like, this is happening. This is romantic and beautiful. I wonder if they beep that part out.
And I'm going to give you a gift that not everybody can have. Have you ever wanted to have an extra 3 or 6 inches of height before you get your mind in the gutter of height? So I was reading this story apparently there's this plastic surgery that will lengthen your height by 3 to 6 inches, cost between $75,000 and $150,000. So basically what it is they were talking about how there's this strange occurrence of highly paid technical professionals, people coming out of Microsoft, out of Google, out of Apple, that these people are going and paying $75,000 to $150,000 to get lengthened over several months, 3 to 6 inches of height. Thought it was pretty cool. I don't know what I'd look like at like 6'7", but no, I'm too much of a chicken. I wouldn't get the surgery. Still kind of cool though.
Yeah. Wasn't that in, what is that? Gattaca, the movie Gattaca. Do you remember that? Because he matched the license of the person he was trying to imitate. And he says, no, you're a few inches taller. And then, and I said, that'll never happen. How old was Gattaca? It was like 20 years ago, if not longer. And they did that.
Oh, you're talking about Inspector Gadget? Is that what you're talking about?
No, Gattaca, the movie. Gattaca. Who's the guy who was married to Uma Thurman? Ethan Hawke.
Yeah.
So, good movie.
Oh, man. We'll watch that. But why don't we get into the news, though?
Let's get into the news.
In our top story of business news, we're covering an interview. Dave Sobel of Business of Tech and a friend of the show, he's been on before. He did an interview with CEO of Pliancy, Marcus Olson, talking about in the last 7 years how he built a $36 million not an MSP. Mark Solson talks about how he got his start in server rooms and in tech and working in a consulting business that eventually went into the MSP world. But some of the key takeaways is that he goes on to talk about how MSPs are experiencing this rebirth of consulting, something that Sobel and other industry analysts have talked about ad nauseum. Talks about how they do bill in 15-minute increments. He goes on to call predictable billing foolish, instead of, you know, he says anytime you're trying to take something variable like the needs of a customer and turn it into something predictable, says that's just not possible. And so he does his hourly billing, but then the parts that are predictable, the network stack, the single authentication, all those tools, he just includes them and actually has been building orchestration from enterprise platforms for the last 7 years. He's grown his MSP into 130 employees. He's had 70% year-over-year growth, and he's moved in 2015 using his private cloud to building orchestration platforms in public cloud. He also goes on to talk about no contracts. Dave Sobel is unavailable to talk with us today. He's at MSSP Live with Joe Panettiere, but he will be with us next week after the release of his part 2 of this interview. And we'll link the first interview down in the show notes below. Tony, this whole advent of not an MSP, he says he calls himself an MSP, his clients call him an MSP, his job posting are MSP because that's what we know, but he doesn't really believe MSPs what it really is, because he says MSPs have a very poor public view, and we've seen that with governments trying to legislate what an MSP is or what an MSP can do. We've seen insurance companies go to battle to the poor practices of MSPs. So it's not surprising he wants to call himself not an MSP, but he's in our space. He's in the tech space. He's in the consulting space, and he seems to be doing pretty damn well. You think he's onto something?
Well, the first things first, advisory. So, that advisory role is gold, and that's the ability to manage the expectations out of the gate. So we've talked about this several times. You know, I was one of the inventors of multi-tenant hosted exchange in 2003. There was no such thing as an MSP. Now that we got that out of the way, there's literally been an evolution that's occurred since 2000. It was about 2006-ish when the first private label hosted exchange version came out. That was me, by the way. And so I've watched the MSPs evolve from the VAR to the MSP to the TSP, the technology service provider, and that advisory role is paramount. I love what he's saying about the predictability is just not possible with customers. But I think there's a core pillar of predictability, and you have to establish that. But the majority, the lion's share of your billables should be, frankly, from a consulting advisory role, because you as the MSP are the expert. I love what he's doing. I mean, give me your thoughts on this, Ray.
So we talked about this in a previous episode. We talked about Microsoft changing their Microsoft Certified Professional programs and the Microsoft Partner Network into this Cloud Practitioner Network, where they're flat out saying, we don't care if you sell our products. We could not care less. What we want to see you do is implement the products, advise solutions, advise architecting, provide all these value-added services on top, right? Jay McBain has talked about, for every dollar of product you sell, a good MSP, a good technology service provider, is adding $6 or $7 of additional revenue on top of that. Salesforce, Mark Benioff has talked about exactly this. Even more money for these Salesforce consultants. There's no question that this is where the money is. But my comment to Dave Sobel on this was, Mark Olson, who's also a friend, I've known him for years. It's an excellent example of what MSPs could be, but I don't think they will be. We see this battle every single day, and they're struggling over what's my stack and what AV and how much should I charge per user, versus what Marcus has done is, that's not a question. We don't care about your stack. It's not interesting. We care about the business outcomes. I'd love to see what other MSPs are doing. I'd love to see, and actually our guest for our third story, also talks to MSPs daily, but he doesn't consider himself an MSP either. And absolutely is extremely successful. So, I'll tease that in a little bit. But we want to hear from you MSPs. Hit us up, or non-MSPs. If you don't call yourself that, hit us up in the comments. Let us know what's going on.
So let's jump into the next story. And on SiliconANGLE.com, how CrowdStrike plans to become a generational platform, written by Dave Vellante. CrowdStrike Holdings, in the last 10 years, is now a $2 billion annual recurring revenue company, nearly 60% annual recurring revenue growth, a roughly $40 billion market cap, and a very high retention rate, with a path to a $5 billion revenue by mid-decade. Stock prices have been fluctuating throughout 2022, with the strategy for vast growth moving forward, even during a potential global recession that was warned by FedEx on September 17th. As mentioned from senior analyst and contributor, quote, "The bottom line is that we expect security to remain a number one priority for chief information officers, and a firm such as CrowdForce, which is a platform play, could benefit in the midterm as we believe it is in a strong position to consolidate point products." The company is free cash flow positive and is in the black, with an operating profit of non-generally accepted accounting principles, yet it has a growing ARR at nearly 60%. SentinelOne is commonly compared to CrowdStrike. Ray, I have so many questions for you on this, because CrowdStrike kind of came out of nowhere, and they are just a name to recognize. But you and I see SentinelOne every single day in the MSP community. So I'm going to ask you about similarities. I'm going to ask about trends. But the one thing I really want to ask is that since CrowdStrike is now positioning their platform as the mechanism to endure a potential global recession, FedEx just warned about it a few days ago, is the platform the future? And is the platform, being a security platform, kind of the safe space for the MSP community that we're talking to? Is that what they should be looking at right now?
So there's a lot of proponents of CrowdStrike. I think it's not something I've used personally. Nothing against it, nothing for it. I genuinely don't have a dog in the race. I like the idea of crowdsourcing, crowdsourcing analytics. We use other tools that do exactly that. API ban is probably one of the more notable ones. Getting the data of all the users and then compiling them to get the best possible information, and then acting upon it. There's commercial applications that do this as well. It's Webroot, tons of AV applications. They've been doing this for decades. This is not a brand new thing. I do think it's interesting to see a vendor coming out or a platform coming out talking about, we're specifically taking these steps to protect us, to mitigate our risk against the oncoming recession, which is pretty universally accepted that it's coming. We've seen the layoffs. We've seen the hiring freezes. We've seen tons of actions in preparation of this, cash hoarding. But to see a vendor come out and say, this is how we're protecting the platform for you, for the user, I think that shows a lot of awareness, not to get too meta with it. I like the idea that they're going and saying, hey, we're taking actions to protect our end users. We talked last episode, talked about protecting the MSP, protecting their supply chain, right? We talked about maybe investing in their supply chain to make sure what they need to survive and thrive and be profitable is available in every instance for them. The vendor coming back and, or the vendor or the product, however you want to term it, coming back and doing the same and saying, hey, we're taking these steps so that our clients can be better protected, our users of the application can be better protected. I think that shows an awareness that I would love to see with other actors in our channel. I think it's phenomenal.
It's funny that you said about the AV players out there. So one of the things in the article, and everyone look at the link in the article, it's a very long, lengthy article that covers entirely too much detail to compress in a short period. But they said our three superpowers in the platform is AV, the antivirus, the next generation antivirus, EDR, which is what they consider their best-in-class endpoint detection and response, and managed hunting. CrowdStrike has a world-class managed hunting team. So those are the three superpowers. So you went straight to the AV, and you hit that right on the vein, which is nice because that is a core pillar in these platforms and what all MSPs should be looking at. And if that's what's going to endure a global recession, I'm really, really excited to see MSPs gravitating toward that direction. So, but being prepared is huge. Security is huge. Ray, I have heard there is a security. Well, before I ask you that, can you give me your password? Do you mind giving me your password? I want to talk about the next story.
Sorry, Tony, I wasn't paying attention because I was rating my hacker. I was giving him 5 stars. In our next story, in our third top story, in security news, Uber has been breached again, as reported by Jai Vijayan on darkreading.com and many, many other sources, which we will link below. On September 15th, Uber confirmed reports of an organization-wide security breach. Apparently, an 18-year-old hacker gained complete admin access using an employee's credentials obtained via social engineering. He then used this to move across Uber's internal domain, including its email, cloud storage, and code repository environments. Also, the alleged hacker's online post suggested he didn't have to breach a single internal system to own most of the company's IT domain. The hacker's motives aren't clear yet. The only things he has done so far, aside from posting screenshots proving access, is to make a lot of noise and say that Uber drivers should be paid more. Uber has not disclosed the details of the incident, except that the company is responding to it and working with the authorities to investigate the breach. Joining us to talk about this is friend of the show, Tom Lawrence of Lawrence Systems and the Lawrence Technology Services channel, which he did a video on this with Jason Slagle and Matt Lee last week. And we will link that below. Absolutely go watch it. A good 26 minutes to talk about this. Thanks for joining us, Tom.
Oh, That was fun. It was a lot to go into the breach because so many things, those details are always enlightening because they can help look that even some of these large companies, even though they have some of the right tools in place, there's always that one little thing they may have overlooked, like a PowerShell script on an OpenShare.
And one of the things I wanted to go off in the very beginning, I was commenting in the pre-show, you touched something that I think warrants being said now with any time we cover something breaking news, and we did this, we talked about this when we did LastPass, we talked about this when we covered other breaking news as far as other breaches. There's a lot we don't know, and we've seen the bad effects of reporting too early or maybe not vetting our sources. You mentioned you didn't want this to become another Ubiquiti event. Can you describe what you're referring to then?
Yeah, so in the Ubiquiti event, Brian Krebs had a source, and the source he validated, and in absolute validation of the person working there, was that they were the head of security for Ubiquiti. So that seems like a very credible source, unless it happens to be that source is the one actually trying to breach Ubiquiti and blackmail their own employer and feeding the news false information. So it became kind of an incident. And obviously one source is not always ideal, but in this tech world, these big companies can be very large, but there's not always a lot of sources of information. Now, sources of information we have on this are going to be, well, mostly the threat actor themselves posting everything because they were more than willing to share things with like VX Underground and several other people. There was even a kind of a joke back and forth because the people in VX Underground later go, I think I know who you are. And they go, yeah, we've talked before, which I thought was great. You know, granting interviews, they just referred themselves as Teapot, the threat actor that was going around in there. This goes back to the Okta Lapsus breach, which was full of misinformation. So first we had false information directly being fed with the Ubiquiti and Krebs case. Then we have the Lapsus Okta, where we're just going to post lies because why not? Because something was true. They got a certain level into Okta, but that's where things were doctored, screenshots and lots of things going off the rails to make noise, causing mass confusion. So when the threat actor is the one, especially when they're doing it for the lulz, sharing things, it's all going to be taken with a grain of salt. And, you know, we don't know until there's a good differ report. You know, scroll back to Cisco, that when they did their breach report, when Talos did the write-up, they didn't just write what commands the threat actor typed. They knew the typos they typed. That's the kind of, you know, breach reporting I think we should be able to get out of this. I'm hoping that, you know, Uber does this. They do a really solid job of the differ report because I'd like to read it and then details, because I think that's the way you get out ahead of this. This is the way you know, say, what did they really get access to? Did they really have something simple, or was it more nefarious and was actually a more clever hack? Because if you want to make them look like fools, oh yeah, PowerShell script with password to their PAM solution on an open share. It sounds too good to be true, but then again, we've also worked in that security enough that that's certainly been something that's happened. It's a lot to unravel.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
In this event, Uber such a common name. Do you think there's going to be a political sensitivity that will probably dilute what the end result will be just because of the level of sensitivity and or do you think there will be a full disclosure? And do you think the other side of this is, do you think there will be a kickback in some way, shape or form where maybe there's going to be a harder penalty or law because of hackers like this, because of the political sensitivity, because of the common household name that Uber is?
Tough to say. I mean, Uber's literally on trial that started at the same time this breach happened for their 2016 breach and their subsequent cover up and wrongdoings all around it. So they're not a company that has a history of being transparent. And until we absolutely force these companies to give us these level of details, but that those level of details come with a double-edged sword. We will end up learning more about their infrastructure. So how much more needs to be known? In my opinion, though, if you look at the way Cisco did it, what do we know about Cisco after the breach? We know Cisco logs every single little detail typed, the level of detail that they have. We actually believe that Cisco let the person be in their systems longer to honeypot them into understanding their pivot points. So when you're that good, now anyone, threat actor knows, oh, we might be able to get into Cisco, but they're going to notice. They're going to see everything. So it makes it's a double-edged sword of which way do you want to go with it? You've got to have your security at a really tight level. But as far as them actually doing it, my current senses, as you know, like I said, they're on trial. I don't think they're going to give us a good report.
Well, anything you say can and will be used against you, right? Especially when you have an active court case. I mean, and something I love, you know, I'm often quoted for saying, you know, I'm in this for the lulz. This attacker, I mean, he was definitely, he, she, whatever, was, until it's confirmed, was definitely in it for the lulz. I mean, they went as far as to go into the Slack, into Uber Slack, and start posting, I've taken over your Slack. I've taken over your, you know, all your systems. And the Uber employees were playing along with it, despite being told by IT, get out of Slack, get out of this communication. I mean, talk about trolling. That's next level trolling there.
Yeah, and it's also hard because the employees, you know, they're getting a message from IT, but they're used to using Slack as their communication. So which one's true? And by the way, if everything's compromised, is anything true? And I don't have nothing else to do, so I'm going to interact with the threat actor. So, because I ain't working right now.
Oops.
This is a very unfortunate situation. I'm really happy for your input, Tom. Thank you so much for being here. I want to know what the end result's going to be.
Yeah. And to always clarify, and I've seen a few spicy takes on this. Kyle from Huntress was talking about this as well. You know, the more funny hacker Twitter, pour one out for that incident response team. They've got a huge job. Once someone owns anything that big, there's going to be some serious hours being put in, not much sleeping. I mean, anyone who's worked in incident response knows it's going to be hard. Kyle commented this on LinkedIn. So you're going to get a lot of people in there. And I feel bad for the people involved, because the people involved are rarely the people have to do the cleanup, the janitors of all of this, the computer janitors that are really scrubbing this up. They're not the ones that left a PowerShell script on there. It was some dev person, something got overlooked. And because, by the way, if you didn't notice, the takeover of the account was all their incident response team's credentials. That was actually a note. It was
to the break glass accounts too. It wasn't just like the normal credentials that they got in through Thycotic, through their PAM server. They got the break glass accounts too, like the fallback envelope and the safe credential that's supposed to be completely offline. They got those too. I mean,
yes, they went up one side and back down the other. They had everything. I mean, they had the right tooling in terms of that. This is a commercial enterprise grade PAM solution on there, but it comes down to, based on what I'm reading, now, I'm not a user of this particular product, but people are talking about how it's implemented. There are ways you can split it up to, it would have required getting multiple pieces, but if any of this is true, it sounds like they did not have that properly configured. So once they got the one piece of credential they needed, that unlocked everything else from there.
And we'll leave you with that. One thing I want to just tease out there, go look at Tom's video, which we'll tag in there. There's, like I said, there's lots of awesome insight and commentary on it. And he does talk about, Tom does talk about how Thycotic, and I'm not blaming Thycotic, this is not a tool problem, but has these extra security layer features that may or may not have been a paid add-on, and maybe that has something at play here. Again, this is far more beyond that, but I want to make sure you go look at areas of the story we were not able to cover here. But either way, thanks so much, Tom. We appreciate you. Can't wait to have you on next time, man.
And one final comment, and I shared this with Ray, so you guys could throw this graphic in there, because this is on Twitter. They blurred out the full credential, but their Veeam password is "I like to eat," and it's blurred out. And I'm like, I want to know what they like to eat, because that's their password. It's "I like to eat," but then someone put a black bar over the full Veeam password, which is good that they did that. But we know that at least the first part of the Veeam password is "I like to eat."
That's what I want to see in the comments. If you want to fill in that blank, put it in the comments. Keep it PG.
And there we go. We just lost any potential rating we could ever get right there. Good job, Tom and Ray. Just, and then ironically, our subscriber rate just shot up. It's like, oh.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Tom. We got some notable mentions to cover. Tony, why don't you take us into it, man?
I'm jumping right into it. As mentioned in CRN Magazine, IronNet lays off 35% of their staff, and they are raising a lot of concerns. A year after going public at a valuation of $1.2 billion, the once high-flying IronNet is now laying off about 35% of its staff, and it's warning that it may not have enough cash to support operations for the next year. Meanwhile, the company is taking major changes at the corporate top level, with co-CEO William Welch agreeing to retire from his executive post and from the board of directors as a way to preserve cash. More updates coming as the events progress. And in our next notable mention, bleepingcomputer.com talks about Revolut hack exposes data of 50,000 users, fueling a new phishing wave by Bill Tolis. Revolut has suffered a cyber attack that gave an unauthorized third-party access to personal information of tens of thousands of their clients. The incident occurred a week ago on a Sunday night. Founded in 2015, Revolut is a financial technology company that has seen rapid growth, now offering banking, money management, and investment services to all customers around the world. Details on how the threat actor gained access to the database has not been disclosed yet, but it appears that the attacker has relied on, get this, social engineering. Today's theme of the stories. Ray, what about you?
My first notable mention is reported by Sergio Gatlan on Bleeping Computer. KB5017308 breaks GPO. Windows 10 update KB5017308 cumulative update release Tuesday is causing group policy object issues. According to reports, GPO file operations no longer work because they can no longer create or copy shortcuts after installation. Admin users reportedly said that all shortcuts created by GPO are created empty with 0 bytes and no info where shortcuts lead to. However, Windows admin said that unchecking run in user security context option on the affected GPOs will address the problem. Microsoft has yet to officially acknowledge the issue and provide a fix. And my next notable mention and last one, Adobe to acquire Figma for $20 billion, as reported by Tom Warren on The Verge. Adobe has announced that it is acquiring Figma for around $20 billion in cash and stock. The acquisition has come as a surprise to many because of the competition between the two in recent years. According to Adobe, the combined company will reimagine the future of creativity and productivity and be able to drive significant value for customers, shareholders, and the industry. Adobe plans to combine communities with Figma and will likely involve bundling Figma products and services into its creative suite. Until this happens, Figma will run the way it always has. Dylan Field, CEO of Figma, said that Adobe is committed to keeping Figma operating independently. In our special feedback from last Friday's episode, Tim Golden posted this picture. Morning coffee goes better with some YouTube videos from MSP Media Network. Thanks, Ray. And I'm going to add Tony. Although I suspect Simon has filled his with milk. We appreciate you, Tim. Thanks for watching along with us.
That is awesome. And in our community events on September 21st at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time is your Top of Funnel, Top of Mind, presented by the Channel Program. Also on September 21st at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Build It Better, MSP discussion presented by Everything MSP. On the 22nd through the 24th, an in-person event, Big Conference 2022 in Hollywood, Florida. On September 23rd at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, MSP Dispatch with a weekly wrap-up presented by yours truly and the amazing Ray Orsini on the MSP Media Network. And finally, on September 23rd at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, September Channel Pitch presented by the Channel Program.
Don't forget to check out last week's episode of the Tech Bar featuring Blaine Yeager and Blake Scott of Uptime VoIP. Hey, I'm Powerhouse Ray.
And I'm Super Cousin Danny.
And we're the hosts of
The Tech Bar.
Pull up a stool with us every other Thursday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern for drinks, jokes, and games with your friends in the MSP channel. That music just keeps getting better and better.
It is so awesome.
I love it. So how'd you like today's episode? If you liked it, hit the thumbs up button. If you hated it, hit it twice. And if you want to hear more, you know what to do. Hit the subscribe button on YouTube or your favorite podcatcher. As my friend Rich Banky says, make sure to tell a friend. Also, be sure to follow us on social media at MSP Media TV. Have any questions? Email news@mspmedia.tv or throw us a voicemail, 833-MSP Network. We'll be sure to answer on the next episode. Tony, we laughed. We loved, we lived. I think it's pretty good for an episode. How are you feeling, man?
Oh man, compared to our last episode, opening up with anal beads and then going into that. Listen, it's always a blast being here. The community is amazing. It's great seeing you, talking with you. People don't understand how hard we laugh. The feedback, somebody comment on something. Trust me, the laughs that we have in the background are awesome. And this community, it could not be better. So I'm really happy about this.
Sorry, I was getting a message.
Sorry, you're on mute.
Yeah, I'm on mute. Yeah, there you go. So I think that takes us out. Thanks, everybody. Take care of yourselves and each other.
Be safe.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.
I know you're an MSP, but what am I? Find out if you're a boomer, a zoomer, or a crowd striker. And don't forget to rate your hacker 5-star. I'm going to start drinking before I do these. But Tony, I might be getting laid off. Did I confuse Tony?
Just completely. Yeah, because I'm the CrowdStrike.
Oh, shit, my bad, dude. I'm thinking.
So I'm like, you caught me.
Okay, let me leave that in instead. My bad.
Like, I just broke at least those got bloopers. Can you give me your password? Do you mind giving me your password? I want to talk about the next story. You're on mute.
It doesn't matter. I don't care anymore. I'm going to do a whole damn story of mine. So, every fucking time. Oh. He then used this to blah, 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 blah. I should have muted myself. It would have sounded better.
Mute, mute, mute. You are
on mute. I don't care. Learn sign language.